Breakfast Business
with Enterprise Ireland
on Newstalk.
America is creating a bipolar world in trade terms, one in which you're either on its side or China's side. The new Cold War is not one which Europe actively wants to wage, but it may come down to picking a side, especially if America threatens to withdraw its military blanket. Meanwhile, the Chinese economy is in its softest patch in many decades, with domestic demand weak and even exports slowing. Finbar Birmingham is Europe correspondent with the South China Morning Post and covers this for them in Brussels. Good morning, Finbar.
Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Not well. You've heard from the voice, but the rest of me is fine, though, thank goodness. How would you describe, Finbar, Chinese relations with Europe, especially Ireland, of course?
I would say, broadly speaking, Chinese-European relationship are also at a decades, the lowest point in decades. There's a confluence of issues that are factoring into that. Two main ones, I would say. The two defining issues in the Europe-China relationship at the moment are China's relationship with Russia and the overcapacity issues in the Chinese economy. There is a big overlap between the two in terms of how they influence policy decisions in Brussels and beyond, but I would summarize it as we're in a sort of toxic doom loop of trade disputes that have been going on for a long, long time that have been aggravated by more, let's say, contemporaneous and massive geopolitical concerns that the Europeans have with China.
Okay, well, let's break it down and start with the overcapacity issue. Does it mean that China is exporting their below-cost produce?
I mean, that's what they would say in Europe, yeah. I mean, China has for many decades relied on a model of economic development whereby it pumps billions of dollars into the industrial economy. Government support for manufacturing, and this has long been sort of the driving force of the Chinese economy. Meanwhile, it has neglected to pull the levers that would galvanize the consumption levels in the Chinese economy. Chinese people tend to save much more than they spend. So you end up with this, and this is a very reductive way of putting it, but there's this dynamic where you have overproduction of key goods in the Chinese economy, not enough demand to absorb that domestically, and it has to go somewhere. The United States is largely closed to large parts of Chinese export profile because of the sort of Trump-era tariffs that have been continued into the Biden era and will probably continue beyond whoever comes to the White House post-November. Other major markets like India are largely closed to these goods, which we're broadly say would be high-tech goods like electric vehicles, but other things like steel and aluminium. Europe is still open. Comparably open. There are tariffs and there are disputes, but it's comparably open. So what we see in Europe is that these cheaper Chinese goods have to come somewhere, so they're coming to Europe.
Okay, and this is, of course, leading to the issue with electric vehicles, Chinese electric vehicles, whether it's BYD or SAIC, coming in at very, very competitive prices into Europe. And that has led to the imposition of tariffs up to about 40%, I think. Is it, Finbar?
Yeah, 37% is the highest. There's a range from 17 to 37%. So you've basically got a debate now, Joe, where, yes, you have these cheaper, let's say, Chinese goods coming to the market. I was speaking to some German manufacturers recently in the machinery sector, and they were saying that since the reopening of the Chinese economy post-COVID, these Chinese competitors have been showing up in Europe selling goods that are at a price at which the German manufacturers can't even buy materials. So there's another layer to the debate as well. It's happening at the same time as we're trying to decarbonize. So you have another side of the debate, which is basically, don't we need as many of these cheap goods as possible? So you're faced, if you're a policymaker, with a very difficult choice. Do you want to protect your local industry and jobs, or do you want to pursue, with full vigor, the decarbonization, the net zero goals? I wouldn't want to have to make that decision. They're both very noble goals and they're difficult ones to choose.
Yeah, and it's as Jean-Claude Juncker famously said, we know what the problem is, we know what the solutions are, but how do we get re-elected by imposing them? So Russia's war of Ukraine has definitely poisoned the well for many Europeans and their attitude to China. Was that a strategic blunder by Beijing for backing Russia?
I mean, looking at it from a European perspective, we would say yes, but I think we're often guilty of looking at things exclusively through a European lens. From China's point of view, anything that perhaps weakens the Western alliance is good. And so Xi Jinping has a very close relationship with Vladimir Putin. He would perhaps fear the fall of Putin and who would come next. It seems a bit far-fetched at the moment, but a liberal democracy on China's huge border with Russia would not be a good thing for China in its sort of form of governance. So from a European perspective, though, we would definitely view it as a strategic blunder, because there's a lot of European capitals who, although there have long been grievances with Beijing over human rights and over trade and economic problems, they were happy enough to continue to do business, continue making money, and continue to have these trade disputes on the side. However, with China supporting Russia, when there's a war on European soil, it has totally changed the dynamic, particularly towards Central and Eastern Europe. You do see a big pushback now that wasn't there before against China. And as I said at the start, it has percolated through everything. It's emboldened Brussels to pursue stronger policies on trade and competition. You see a whole plethora, like a sort of groundswell of these cases and investigations. And I think, to be honest, that's the way things are going to continue to go as long as we continue to see the sort of tacit and rhetorical and actually, in some ways, the sort of financial support from China for Russia.
Okay, excuse me. Fascinating conversation. That's Finbar Birmingham, Brussels correspondent with the South China Morning Post. And thank you for joining us.
Breakfast Business
with Enterprise Ireland
on News Talk.